Media. Okay, it is my pleasure to introduce our final from the official summer school, because Child Brainers will continue tomorrow with the internal meetings. But for the like official summer school, this is the final talk, and it's been given by Joni Kettunen. He's the CEO and the founder of First Beat Company. At the moment, it's a leading provider of physiological analytics. Is that correct?
Yeah.
For sports, well-being, and many applications. You will tell more about them, and using especially heart rate data. So, as I told, Joni came here as a postdoc first from Helsinki, and you just mentioned that you worked for 5 months.
Yeah,
and then found out that this was not really what you were looking for, and then you tell the story about founding then your own company. So I guess it's much better if I let Joni talk the rest of the things here. So well, very warmly welcome here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. And now, how many of you are from Finland? Okay. But you are already behaving like Finns, because you go very far from that. Nobody is sitting here. That's yeah. but anyways, nice to be here. So maybe what Paul was telling, that come to Jyväskylä as a postdoc, and then it's easy to found a company. But that's maybe not the story. But anyway, so I've done some research work by myself, and at the company First Beat, I'm co-founder of that company, and I guess the primus motor there. And still, if we look at our values there, it's one is science, but it's just not just, you know, being marketed as scientific, but if it's not based in science, what we do, it will just not work. Other is humane, it's for humans. We try to improve human lives. And third one is learning. We try to learn, but also it's for people, athletes, patients, anybody. It's about learning about yourself, about your lifestyle and health. So first I will tell a little bit of what First Beat is today, to give a little bit perspective. And we founded the company in 2002, so 15 years ago already. And then after that, we will go back in how did this happen. And how did I come up to found the company, and what I have learned there. And then I try to reserve some time. Let's reserve some time for discussions and questions. Then you can ask questions. You can ask anything. I don't promise I will answer. But anyways, I personally feel that it's a very important topic is how we use scientific knowledge and development into services, practices, products, everything in society to make the world a better place. And one form of making the world a better place is through companies, through commercial services. That's a way of putting things in practice. And that's how I feel. And anyways, as here in Europe, so we must be good in our knowledge and using that knowledge to improve products' qualities, bring new innovations to the market. So science is important, but what I always found that what's much more actually difficult is applied science, actually putting things in the work, than only doing something with some paradigm that you can kind of, which may not sometimes relate to actual world, actual happenings. But if it's applied work, then it actually needs to work. The theory needs to work. And that can be very, very challenging. But I think the opportunities are certainly there. And some opportunities are certainly also in interdisciplinary work. And I hear that this is quite... there are different disciplines in this group, which is good. And that's how... and that's where a lot of innovations happen, is where different disciplines... different disciplines meet, basically. So... At First Beat, so we do physiological analytics for sports and well-being, and we operate in three different market segments. At the heart, we are a technology company, and we using heartbeat data, some other forms of data as well, we can tell quite a lot what's happening in your body. So using heart rate variability, for example, and I will show some examples, but in terms of your fitness, in terms of your stress, recovery, sleep quality, and some other things. And we divide that signal into many, many different pieces. We have many mathematicians working. We have about 110 people today. We have about 25 physiologists there. We have 10 mathematicians or applied physics people, and that's the kind of paradigm. We have been basically building our own paradigm into understanding what's happened in the human body, human physiology, based on a lot of that is based on heartbeat data. So at any given moment, there are, let's say, 10 to 15 different processes in our body which do influence our heart rate, heart rate variability. And so, for example, when I breathe in, my heart rate slightly increases. When I breathe out, my heart rate slightly decreases. That's where we get to track what is our respiration, for example. And so the model builds, and we use a lot of laboratory studies there as well. So we are in professional sports, where we power about 950 professional sports teams around the world. So in almost every major city in the Western world, we have some customers. They're like Golden State Warriors in NBA, they are in the finals, or Las Vegas Golden Knights, or Manchester United. Just tell a sport, we are there. And I believe we'll be market leader in this segment next year. And it's a professional market, as we call, and it's a coach's tool to understand how each athlete is doing in terms of their physical training load and their recovery, and be better in athletic development. And there's also stress management there as well. We do license also our technology, core technology, into consumer devices, like this Garmin, which I have here now, which can show my stress level, or it shows my fitness level and some other parameters. And there are quite many millions of devices being delivered every year, and that's increasing. So we are market leader in that space. Actually, and there's about 90 different products that have. So if you have bought one product with heart rate sensor, there's a possibility that you are our customer there. And then the most maybe the interesting thing is wellness services, where we have been mainly working in the Northern Europe, in UK, a little bit elsewhere as well. And where these tools are being used as a part of corporate wellness services, where people get to, basically employee get to understand a little bit better on how to live healthier, how to be also more productive in their own way, and that's what the employers typically pay that, and that concept, we call it also, it's a professional wearable service in a way that concept also always includes one-to-one feedback health coaching. So it's not like a consumer product, but it's this very high accuracy heart rate variability measurement, plus the analytics which we provide, plus coaching. And we have trained about 3,000 professionals, mostly in Europe, into using this method, and we have about 250,000 people who have gone through this, and with quite good results. There, and about 82% of the end users has been able to change some aspect of their lifestyle. So those are the markets we work in. So basically at the heart there, it's physiological analytics, and then we apply that to different areas. And there's different form factors, and even in the transportation, there are many different areas that we may apply our technology in the future. But then big growth area is our own products. So basically, we use the heart rate, heart rate variability as one of the key signals. We also measure some other things, and depends on the devices. I don't know, have you heard of a saying that another scientist error is another scientist data? At least, you know. So in a way, we do it like that. So we try to capture all the errors and data and different parts, and that's how we actually created that was my part of my PhD work as well, is trying to understand what's happening, how to analyze these physiological time series in a complex environments where there's no it's not like a paradigm that you induce some like a reaction response, how do you call that kind of a paradigm anyways, but like in a complex paradigm, there's no supervised anything, and then you try to see what's happening there in the from the time series modeling. So that was my PhD work, actually, and we are kind of continuing in that there, and so then we create a digital model of the physiology. So obviously there's a lot of mathematics involved, there's a lot of laboratory work and stress and validations, which some of them are actually done also here at the Department of Psychology for the stress part, and then we use the data and we improve and get better, and that then we get data like that on different aspects of our health or on our lifestyle. And so there's a lot of labs, and also we do work with a lot of universities there, and they use our tools as a research tools, but also we like that there are some publications being done, because it's generally good, of course, and it increases awareness, and then we do have quite a lot of, I think we have the biggest database on the high accuracy heart rate variability recordings in the world, and long term recordings, and then on that data set also we have published, that we haven't published, but there has been some universities that has published some results on how the generally like norms, and how, for example, there was just today in the news that how the alcohol happens to impact our sleep quality, and we have this kind of dose response results from the Finnish population, which has been very good in that domain using the alcohol. So yeah, but that's... Well, we have similar results also from UK. But anyway, so that's... And because of our background, so we try to... We are not the biggest company in the world, but we try to be open on what we do, and we have white papers. And generally, we try to do the good thing, the right thing, and then it's... So it doesn't harm then to work with the universities there as well. And that's an area we like to build more partnerships as well. So So there's for, as an example, this is a Garmin product there, and these are some of the features we provide there. And even though I'm my background is in psychophysiology, but then some of the aspects there are, for example, very important to our, well, all of this is important to our health, but for example, well, this one, if your VO2 max with this fitness level, actually, if it's less than 26 milliliters as compared to average of 38, at the age of 50, actually your chance of dying is 70% higher. So I would say that fitness is also relevant for our health. Okay, these are some of the teams we work with, and they get some of these dashboards. So it's so like the Golden State Warriors, I think they might be winning the NBA, and we take full credit of that. That's... as well, we take the full credit for many of the other winners, and we are not going to speak about those who are not winning. That's so this is the concept that this is for everyone basically, and it's used by employees. So there's the specific recorder we had to develop, and then you get to see this kind of data on your stress. The red is stress there. It's basically sympathetic nervous system activity. Green is recovery. It's the vagal dominance, parasympathetic nervous system activity, and this kind of data is then used to educate people on their stress and recovery balance and their lifestyle. So it's really health education in that way, and this, for example, demonstrates how the resources go in your body, and when you are under stress, and how well are you capable of recovering from that. And then we can see, for example, that on Wednesday it's going a little bit downhill all the way, maybe. Maybe my guess is alcohol is the reason, but it can be something else. It's often alcohol, and data like this. And so, so that's what we do at First Beat, and then how did we get into this? So, I guess it's a long story, but let's start from where I started studying at the University of Helsinki. So I guess I was interested in the therapeutic use of psychology. I have not worked a single day as a therapist or something like that, and I don't actually know how I got my degree, because I was kind of supposed to work at least some time, some weeks as a therapist, but I never did. But I've been always interested in a human as a deterministic machine, machine how it works, and then I went quite early to into research group there. With it was on stress because at that time it was seemed that the stress, like the dynamics of stress and stress system, that was more applicable using like systemic theories, and I started studying time series analysis, so I was doing quite soon research there, and I think I started to develop my own paradigm in a way, and then my professor wasn't really so she was good because she let me do what I do, and it was not part of that paradigm there earlier. I got some data sets that I from psychological testing, for example, some Rorschach testing, some other data sets where there was a lot of physiological signals there, like ECG, facial muscles activation, and electrothermal activity and this kind of stuff. And then I started making a time series models on what's happening. Could I say from a systemic point of view what's happening there in the physiology? How these different systems and organs work together, because as you may know, autonomic nervous system often it may react in concert or in an orchestrated manner, and that's how the body goes. And my interest was also into how the body works within subjects, because a lot of the work had been done in between, comparing between subjects. Things so like comparing my lungs to your heart size or something, so it's kind of like, but then how does the process go within subjects, intra-individual? And so if I still remember the title of my thesis, so I had my dissertation in 1999 from the University of Helsinki, and it was methodological and empirical advances in the time series analysis of psychophysiological time series. I can still do it without a pause in the between. So that was my, and if there are two kinds of psychophysiologists, so I was in roughly, I would say that the others are more psychologists and others are more physiologists, so I was probably a little more physiologist, and from the methodological point of view. In psychology, psychophysiology, there has been always a good, good sense of methodologies. And in psychology generally, but there's been good sense of methodologies in terms of how laboratory protocols has been developed, evaluated, all different concepts of validity, reliability, and psychology and psychophysiology, so it's by nature it's almost always a difficult subjects, topics, complex things, and. Well, life is complex. in any case, and so I think I did benefit from that background a little bit, and I did publish some of these methodology papers basically, and then I had my dissertation, and I was thinking of that I should go. Maybe I would go for some, offer some projects, or go for some big company work in some usability. It was usability testing at that time was kind of area, but luckily I didn't. It wouldn't have been that big of a market. And then I was being motivated to move to Jyväskylä, into this very building, or the, to be a research coordinator. And I was actually promised to get all the resources I need to do whatever I want to do. Well, I mean, I should have known better. That kind of offers are not are not reality in any place of the world. But anyways, there was the sports department here, and actually the only sports faculty in Finland. And then there's also quite good mathematics and physics department here as well, applied mathematics. And that was in 2000, and at that time they had been starting doing some overtraining tests for the elite athletes, like cross-country skiers. That's a big sport in Finland, cross-country skiing. And that was the dawn of some first heart rate monitors with a strap here, which were capable of recording up to 15 minutes of beat-by-beat data. Wow, 15 minutes, now we can do 1 year. 1 year, but from the wrist. But anyway, so that meant that we could do something outside of lab. Outside of lab and go, because in lab, you know, it's kind of challenging. Of course, it's good for research, but then if you want to apply something, if you want to get greater numbers of some kind, so then it's lab is a little bit more difficult for that. And so we use these heart rate monitors, and as they have been doing that for elite sports, so that was okay. So they were looking at heart rate variability there at the different aspects, and of course at that time the sportsmen, if you want to win Olympic medal, you are practically willing to do almost anything there, as we know. No, and at least it was, and so that's something. Even the devices were a little bit clumsy at that time. And then I happened to meet with one person, actually here from a doctorate program in time series, analysis of applied mathematics, and he was doing his PhD in time series analytics, and he wanted to get some data. So then I did meet with some physiologist at the Research Institute for Olympic Sports, there where doing the overtraining study. So if I had been combining the physiology and mathematics myself, then that was the part of what I did in my dissertation and kind of like my interest as well, putting the human in a mathematical model. How great is that? but anyway, so then I had proper mathematicians there and I had proper physiologists there. And then I was putting them to work together. And that's how we started building a discipline. And we are very good in making a mathematical modeling of the biological systems as of our physiology. But that's what we have been doing for the last 18 years. And we have really built a paradigm there, improving. And so I got this... These two disciplines work together, and then we had some research projects then funded by the local innovation agency. It was called TEKES at that time, which makes some funding of applied research which can have some commercial impact. And that's how we got to play a little bit with how to build a team and does this work, and we didn't need to take like a personal commercial responsibility at that time. And we did also participate in one competition. It was that called Venture Cup. It was like a competition for like academic teams on what kind of business plan competition, and that was really good because it's, I don't know if we, how much we gained there per se, but it got us to think about a little bit, what kind of business we could make that. And then we got some positive feedback from the business people, venture people involved there, which kind of brought us that, okay, yeah, maybe we should do this. And that was much before then, when there was more wearables coming to the market, like the hype was getting there like four years ago, much earlier, which was good for us because we didn't have the biggest budgets, but we got to learn ourselves on how to do things. And because sometimes it doesn't, even if you have 100 million per 1 year, you cannot just, you need to learn. So even like Apple cannot change the laws of physics. That's unfortunately. Even being Apple, it doesn't allow you to, or how the physiology works, right? So, so we got a little bit of understanding during that project that, yeah, we could do things in a different way than it's been done earlier. And as much of the research had been in a laboratory, in a controlled setting, so basically analyzing the data from outside, whether people are doing whatever they're doing actually, and we got to do some validations. Even we did even some pharmacological blockage of the autonomic nervous system to see how the system really works, and then we found the company in 2002, so in September, and actually it was Friday 13th, which kind of I remember that. So and that's initially we had one big customer which was it's a wearable brand called Suunto, one of the early, they were called heart rate monitors at that time, and that did help us to get a little bit of funding. So because initially they saw that there could be some there would be some potential for the get some physiological knowledge into their products, and that got us a little bit of credibility also for the funding part. And then we got some funding from the DECES, like grants and loans, and which got us, and that combination got us going. And it was like four people at the beginning, and we had an idea that this should be big and global and there, but we didn't really understand how. If we look back, but always it's about learning, right? And that's the most important topic, anyways, being able to learn. So then, but we had this one customer, Suunto, which was good, and in 2004 there was our software was part of one of their models, and then in a PC environment, and we did quite hard work to put calculations on a wrist device. Battery-powered wrist device, and that happened in 2006, because there's a huge amount of optimization to be done to be able to. It's quite heavy calculation by nature, and so we had to. There's like a signal processing, a lot of signal processing in devices like this. So it's not so. Well, nowadays these devices are like monsters, but they used to not. They used to be much low power devices, and. So we got going, and quite soon we understood that the key thing there, so is that how, what is the actual value for the end user, so consumer in this game, and that's so, you know, what is valuable. So how does it actually provide meaning? How does it provide meaning for the end user? So it, because first it was like technology, we can do this and this and this, and you know, trillion parameters. How nice, but then actually how the technology is being used to provide better user experience for the end user, which is, after all, the point of buying a device, is how it will help you. And that's the same also today. So our development there, it's guided by user experience, which is a psychologist. We use ethnography or observations and different kind of panels, and we do testing, A/B testing, and then of course then there's the physiology part, physiologist, and we do laboratory work, and then there's mathematics part, and always then when we hire people, we obviously test them, and one important thing is the set of mind, and it's this term called growth mindset. I don't know if you have heard, but in a way that you see challenges as opportunities and not like obstacles. We can do it. We can always do it. And because what we are doing, it hasn't been really done earlier. We are thought leaders there, and what we want to create this better world. In many ways, and so we need to have people who are capable of learning and doing things which has not been done before. Of course, we like to that they need to bring some skills there, and we do this kind of testing there, and that's very important. So whether it's from a physics side, mathematics, or from physiologists, so we have this testing and how capable they are producing, developing themselves, producing something that wasn't necessarily taught in school, and that's the key characteristic. Of course, then we need to have some. There's other things, and of course, and you did need to learn something in school. that's very important. Is who we take in, and then also it's if you apply for companies. So it's communications is very important. So if it looks like a research manuscript, Times New Roman 12. Don't do it. Don't do an application like that. But because what is very key, Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's some business you can do it. But for us, at least, how we, it's a very key thing, is especially in interdisciplinary, is how you communicate, even if you are not in a marketing function anyway, how you communicate with others. That's the key success factor in many companies, in many businesses, and especially when it's interdisciplinary, so because we need to, you know, mathematicians need to talk physiology, physiologists need to talk mathematics, and then you need to, you know, all of that needs to come to the UX, and then there's the whole business side, what we are doing. So communications is very important, and it needs to be very clear, straightforward, not too much. If it's too much, it can leave the impression that you don't really know what is it, where's the message. So that's everybody's busy, and so that's very important, is your communication style. But I think the same must apply for many, even for research grants. But of course, it's understandable that research grants applications can be a little bit longer than what we expect. But still, you need to be clear in what is it. And other thing is that thinking of what you can really produce there. What is the really, really competitive advantages or key thing you can produce there? So going a little bit deeper there, and it's of course, I mean, if you maybe this doesn't apply for you, but if I get applicant from, let's say, from who has just got a degree from, let's say, from the commercial school of commerce or something like that. So then you say that my expertise is strategy change, internationalization, and all of that. So, well, you graduated. You just graduated. How come? I mean, this is your expertise area. So really think of where you can. But then again, think about the value, where you can really bring, something. And then again, something, because you are doing your PhD there. So that then again, you may have something deep. Well, you have something deeper. By definition, but you may have something deeper that may be usable by some company from another angle, so like an application area. So maybe some skills, some skills you have learned can be very valuable into some other vertical, so to say. And that's also something to consider. But you really need to see what's going there underlying and really get to the point, and that's but I guess one important thing is to discuss with people and learn from that and identify if there are opportunities. Now, a lot of the world, a lot of the business world, and generally a lot of the world, because it's many of these things we have, they are for humans, right? And there's a human element to everything. And then there's a lot of people from different disciplines working there, like marketeers engineers, also in this room, I think, and taking the role of the, not, I don't mean specifically in this room, but taking the role of the human sciences, and then so I think there's, but we can go much, much deeper, and that's something we should, because it's everywhere. Humans are, I mean, human science applies to everywhere. If it is, and so that's where we have been rather poor as a discipline, at least if I look at psychology, there would be much, much more information, science, practices, knowledge to be applied, which is not applied. And that can be quite valuable. So maybe something in your methodology could be valuable for some business areas, which may not be something that you would, maybe it's something that you wouldn't really think like that, but it could be applied. And certainly then if we look at, I strongly believe in the use of technology in the health and like rehabilitation, for example. And I know that there's some practices here in Jyväskylä also in this area, and that's kind of where we are as well. And certainly the world is going to be a smarter place, at least I like to hope so. And it's at least the long trend would be like that, despite some politics sometimes, strange things happening. But so eventually it will be there. And in 10 years of time, we will have a look and we will see that, yeah, this is what had to happen. This is much smarter way of doing. So for example, in terms of preventive healthcare, if 85% of the diabetes can be prevented, is estimated to that can be prevented from the stage when there's a pre-diabetes, so it means that you will get the diabetes in 1 year unless something happens. So in that stage, 85% can be prevented, and that could you don't need to be PhD in mathematics to calculate that, you know, that could be quite a valuable thing to prevent, and things will change, systems will take, and we will be smarter in our healthcare, and especially, of course, if we think of children, if we think of the years ahead. So the society, I'm positive that the society will get smarter there. But then again, it means that there needs to be good solutions there. Good solutions to actually solve the problem, and to solve the problem for somebody who is paying that, so you need to go many steps ahead where we are now in terms of application, and that's the challenge, of course. But there's no reason to expect that there wouldn't be more money in terms of preventive measures in health and well-being area, and that's going to happen. But at the same time, because it needs to be whatever we are offering them, it needs to be very valuable for somebody to pay for that. So it needs to be easier to implement, easier to take into broader use, and that's generally the challenge there. So I think now maybe it would be good to have some questions or comments. I can continue speaking if you want, but just guide me where. Sorry. That not academy.
Yeah.
Okay. I have ADHD. I like things going or something like that. It's never diagnosed or anything, but that's my self-diagnosis anyway. So, but you can use it also for your benefit, maybe. But anyway, so I like things to go really, really fast. I get impatient if things are not going very fast. That's one one answer. Also, actually, at the end, if we think of, we have been able to develop methodology quite consistently over the years, and it's been more consistent in a way that we probably would have been able to do in a university because of all the, you know, grants and all that. So in that way, and we are really, really applying science every day. That's what we do. Of course, for the commercial benefit, and we don't publish like that. We do something we publish, but it's for commercial reasons. So it's in a way that it's faster. Development is faster there, I can be my. It's not always like this, but I can. It's sometimes you can control your own destiny. Okay, you can do it also in academy. And also in academy, there's a lot of entrepreneurship in a way that it's you need to apply. You are kind of responsible for yourself, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of similarities also there. But I think that it's easier to implement some strategy in company and be more consistent that in academy when it sometimes it can be a little, there's a lot of, lot of things you need to do which may not all be something that you want to do. It depends on what you want to do, of course.
Okay. But do you think the factor of being, because the problem, well, one of the things of academia is like it doesn't matter if you're very good because you have to apply for grants and people normally that they read the grants, they are not really experts in your field. So it's convincing people that they have to fund your own work.
Yeah. Yeah, in.
That's something that goes.
That would be part of academia I would hate. Yes, so the question.
Yeah.
Yes, so the question was that basically relating to that in academia you need to apply for grants, and sometimes the people who read the applications, they may not be experts on that area, or at least we may think so if we don't get the money. If we get the money, maybe then we think that they will be very knowledgeable. but yeah, so that would be, and the question was that is that reason to go away from academia, but certainly that would not be a factor to get me in. so yeah, I don't. But of course that happens everywhere, where there's public policies. Of course, then in a commercial where if you get a good product that is seen valuable for customers that are willing to pay money, so then that dynamics merges a little bit. You know, then it's if you get it right for the customers, they are willing to put money, then that goes like that. So in that way, it's more straightforward. Yeah.
Writing grants in academia is like the equivalent to money.
Yeah, but then there's a lot of stupid investors in business, which it's a little bit the same. Yeah. Yeah.
Project, say next time you cannot actually say that we want to continue with this. We have found this and this, and now we would need more money to find out more about the same topic. They want us to change topic every 4 years. And I found it quite interesting that you can actually be more consistent in at least you have been able to do continue with research. Research line can stay. And I guess if you think for example, in cancer research, you need to be really persistent and sometimes continue. So maybe in some other environments that are fully academic, you can continue. But in academia, it's a bit of a challenge. We have Paul here who is long-term academic. What is your opinion, and how is it in, for example, in Leuven or Belgium? In academia, so it's also an interesting aspect. How would you comment on this?
I think it's changing very rapidly in the last week. What is possible and not possible? I think the more heterogeneous in earlier time, but more it is possible.
But can you continue easily? Can you say that I have been doing this for 4 years now, and you give me money to continue to do what I did? Or do you need to present a new topic?
So perhaps I can comment on this.
Yes.
So I think that we can continue what we're doing, only for those things where we have shown excellence. We cannot continue to do our hobby projects.
Yeah, sure.
We can continue to do the work that we have shown.
Yeah.
Companies can continue to do these things if they're really good at doing these things.
I don't think that you have to somehow, for Academy of Finland at least, it's the case that you have to hide it a bit, what you call to show your excellence, but the research topic has to be changed. It cannot be that.
But continue to do the same research topic that was for the excellence.
Evaluation.
If one of your reviews is saying it's only incremental, then you're clear.
In company, it's actually, it's of course we need to, like, there's a lot of discussion about disruption, innovation in a way, but also it's a lot of that is hard work, and it's and then you need to have this increment. I mean, if you know this, like, do you know what is? I think it's flywheel. Thing that goes, so there's this concept that you know, if you have the equal newtons in the pushing, that initially it's very, very slow. It's almost like not moving, but if you put it all the time there, so it gets faster and faster, and at some time, it's very fast. So in the same way, of course, then you need to know which direction to go and be consistent, and of course you need to change, you know, able to, but anyways, in some things it's very, you can just, it's very important, I think, to have this kind of possibility for incremental, because that's not, it's not like you can change the world every 1 year. Yeah, and to get really, really, really results. So I think that's...
bias, as was talked in one of the earlier things, just adding evidence to an existing theory will never be published in top notch journals. If you do that, Science, Nature, whatever, will say one. It's not interesting for us, it must really be a jump. And that makes why, in evaluating, if people grant funders.
It was founded in 2002.
So that's already quite some time ago.
That's correct.
Technology has changed quite a bit. If you were now studying at university, what would be the skills that you would focus on most in pursuing such a path?
Okay, so if I was now in university, and I guess which faculty? Well, there's certainly a lot of... demand on, I would say, demand on smart computational methods, on understanding. And but then it's not like some IBM Watson bullshit marketing, but really and combining that with some real domain knowledge. So that's one area certainly. And then still it's us humans. So there's a lot of it's a little more, well, let's say services industry generally. Services, so I think there's a lot of opportunities in services and scaling that and from a human perspective, making things well. So that's a good question. I haven't really thought about it, but certainly for computational methods in different worlds and aspects, that's automation and this kind of aspect, so that's one thing. And making maybe a mobile game company, but anyways, it's one out of 1,000 that kind of succeeds, so that's a little risky as well. Yeah, actually coming to the discussion there, so of course we are developing in a way methodology. So in terms of methodology development, the incremental can be a little bit more understandable than in some other areas. So, yeah.
I understood that you have been building it little by little. This is whereas, as you said, that in science you sometimes they would like to see us these jumps, you know, to something. Yeah, of course, in the reality, it's the same. We cannot really build anything. Too much, and the world is becoming all the more
with the expertise you have, you can move.
Yes. Yes. Applied, yeah.
Field of area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interest in the industry because humans are there. So there's a lot of interest in the industry to understand how humans work and how can we, you know, use it for the benefit or sometimes for manipulation or yeah, you know. But anyways, that's and but generally companies try to do good things. Generally, that's yeah.
Was it long, and did you have some moments you were thinking like, because there's something like this thing, like I want to get out, and with your company, and it's really working?
Yeah.
Do you have a moment you were doubting that you were doing a good thing? Or?
Yeah, it's. I guess I didn't, because at that time I was. I didn't have. There was. I had to go to army in Finland. You need to do some kind of service. So I had a break there anyway, so it was in a way easy. I didn't have then anything, so it was in that way it was easier. I had a good postdoc position somewhere, it may have been, or maybe it wouldn't have happened that fast. We got some funding at the beginning, which is very important to get to pay your rent and or the loans and stuff like that. So that was pretty important. But then because we have been doing this quite some time already, so there has been different phases though in the company. So initially it was like, I guess, trying to get something, and we didn't probably have a clue how to, we just had this, what we thought a neat thing, but how to actually use it for somebody's benefit, and it was very much emphasis on research. And the market was not there either. So like first 5 years, mostly research and development. Of course, okay, testing with customers and so on. So it was that, and then there was like a next phase. We started getting customers as the market also developed. The technology has been developing quite a lot at that time, which has been good because there's more availability of sensors, which has been always a key factor for us. And now there has been much faster commercial development. So I would say there's like three different phases in the company, and it's a different company. And from like from 30 people, then you know, to 115 or something. So but that's a positive thing also, and there's more traction really, because it's so if it would have been all the same for 15 years, so I don't know if I think I must have changed it to something, maybe come back to academy. I don't know, but they can. I mean, there will be times like that. And then, of course, it's how to get money what you have, if you are an entrepreneur. So then it's and probably you need to probably do something like a service related maybe first to get the money and then you can. It depends, of course, on your concept, but it may be that you need to work a little bit harder at the beginning and bring everything that you have on the table and for assets and then you can, and later on you can concentrate a little bit more into maybe smaller thing which you can do in a broader way, but initially it's just important to get somebody pay to get money. Yeah.
As a company leader and made a PhD yourself, do you prefer for certain jobs in your company people with a PhD, or doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. We have maybe like 7 PhDs in our company, but it doesn't really matter. And we have one person who has been academy professor also, but he has also some industry background. So otherwise, some works like for computational mathematics. So we get some applications all around Europe, and so. But it's not all. It's often sometimes in a let's say if you look at the CV, for whatever is the, so it's often somewhere in the middle in terms of experience we get. If you have a lot of experience, it's not like it's not to say that you wouldn't apply, but often you may be a little bit less flexible, you in terms of like working methods, and because we have this applied test, so like you know, solve this problem. We know it's hard to solve. They have 1 week of time to solve it, but then we see how they start figuring out how their mind works. Basically, that's like an open table, show how your mind works and how you communicate that. And so, and then of course, then if you don't have any experience, then it's also a little bit hard to, it can be a little bit hard to, yeah.
You never take someone with 5-6 years of postdoc?
No, not to say. I mean, we have some like that, but it's not, it really depends on the mentality and kind of, but there can be that if you are, unofficially, if you are too long in a university, that can be, let's say, it's not a bad thing, but you need to, don't let the university to teach you how to behave. It's a little strange answer, but to be more frank, so the university is not always the most flexible. So as long as you take, you know, working methods, everything outside, you are fine. But if you go with the university, because university kind of offers the one route there, if you are there for too long, I mean, it can be a fine route, you know, but then that may make you a little bit inflexible for some other. But okay, like companies like Google, they have experts from universities, and so it depends again on what kind of company and in which kind of like, but it's but if we think of R&D, for example, so we look for the mindset, and the mindset is very important. And from the beginning of your, Silicon Valley, they teach it in the kindergarten, that you know, they actually teach growth mindset, whatever, in that kind of thinking there. But I think there it goes a little bit too far, because then there's a lot of suicides and, you know, teenage, and so it's a kind of. But anyway, so that's. That's mindset is most important, and we deliberately have these tests to see how their mind works for that reason. No. It's just that we so let's say we have like a 70 let's say we have 70 applicants,
yeah,
of which we let's say may filter that maybe we filter 20 or 15 there, and then we provide a some like a 3 or 5 like challenges, and then they will have 1 week to provide answer for us. And the challenges are related to the work topic that we are looking for, and then we look how they, I mean, they are not like a right or wrong answers there, but we look how they start thinking about that and how their mind works and how capable they are presenting that. And then that gives an opportunity for, you know, it's an opportunity for anybody in that group to show what they can and how their mind works, in a way. So, yeah.
When you founded your company, what was your basic team? What was the education that these people had?
We have a mathematician, a physiologist, and me, and then one business people came. Person came a little bit later there, but he was also actually just graduated, so very heavily in the domain area, not so much business.
The mathematician and the physiologist left also the university to
found
the company together with you.
Yeah. Yes. So we were able to learn if we could solve these problems in this project, which was before founding the company. And in Finland, there has been this kind of funding, which we've been quite good, actually, because without that project, we would not have funded the company. That's it. Yeah,
Tekes.
Yeah, today, yeah, that's correct.
They fund specifically, and they encourage the kind of companies to start things.
Yeah.
Because university has also gone, is probably growing out of this old
fashion station is becoming a bit more flexible. And
yeah.
So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. So you should think of a problem that you can solve. There's a challenge, there's a pain that you can solve. And then it becomes valuable. And then I know that in most of the European countries, there are agencies like this Tekes Business Finland, which like to fund this kind of projects that have a commercial ambition there. But think about something that would be valuable to solve. Somebody's pain you can solve. That's very important, because if there's a pain you can solve, then I'm willing to pay money for that. And you should solve that better than anybody. But it can be a small problem, or maybe it can be like, or you can do it in small scale, maybe locally. But you must be better than anybody else. Otherwise, it's not going. I mean, well, yeah. You need to be the best, yeah. That's how the... But it gets best in solving that problem. Maybe in that area, it doesn't mean like you need to be global at the beginning. But certainly, I mean, you need to be good. But it doesn't need to be like you need to solve everything. Yeah. With us, yeah. Well, of course, I mean, if you are employed by us, so then it's very very directed in a way. So often, let's say innovation, so often innovation, we don't often use the word innovation, but we do, I think we do a lot of that as a continuous basis. That's what we are forced to do. And you, first thing is you really need to know what is the problem. You need to understand. You don't know the answer. But first thing is really important. I need to solve this. And the problem comes from a commercial side. We need to understand the humans there. And that's kind of like creating the problem, so to say. And okay, this is a challenge. We need to solve that. And then there's pressure there. A little bit of pressure. Now we need to solve this. And then there's interdisciplinary team. And then often if we are starting point here, then it often goes like this. It never goes like this, and then you are directing yourself, and it may be incremental. It may be like now we are like doing some studies there at the high altitude chamber there. How does it influence our model if you are in 3,000 meters as opposed to like sea level? We also do some experiments in sauna. How does it work in how this adjusting to heat conditions and stuff like, you know, and then, but it's in our company it's more directed in terms of like the research, and then of course sometimes it can be a little bit more exploratory, but there's always a target there though, always a target of some kind, and then if it's a university project that we work with, of course we cannot really tell what you do there, and I guess we shouldn't either. But what is important then that we have a good, and that's where we like to develop explicitly, is that we have a good understanding of our collaboration in a way that this is what we get, this is what you get there. And so that there's no like, either way, there's no false understanding of something. And then often we are happy we get some data set, maybe there's some publication. Or maybe there's some like a specific domain we like to get a little bit more information. But of course, then we are much more faster in our R&D and development. We need to be as directed, so it's not possible to do really R&D work with the university. It's been doesn't work like that. And because university also needs to have your own targets, that we can do some subparts or some validations or maybe getting some initial data sets or so, but and oh, okay, we have hired people also from these projects, projects, but it's of course university have their own targets, so we can but that's what is important to be very clear on what, who gets what there, and that's the because the definition of collaboration is that everybody, I mean both parties or different parties should benefit, and that's the way, and we like to develop long term partnerships in a way that then we are able to also support a little bit more in research from our side, for example, and you know, give access to our data as well, and whatever makes sense. But so that there's a longer term collaboration in a way that there's because, for example, writing academic papers, so it's it should be, you know, it's long term work, and we rather invest in collaboration with parties who will be doing that same thing, or not the same thing, but you know, continuing that after, you know, 3 years. And 5 years, 5 years, and not changing to a you know new topic after the you know the funding period has gone. That's because then it's really disappointing for us also if we don't really get what we were thinking that there would be, for example, nice publications in this area. So that's. Anything. Seems like you have had a long day or a long night, I don't know.
Maybe a little bit more scientifically oriented question. Have you considered using signals from the brain monitoring
I guess not really. Well, we do use, for example, in our sleeps. Well, not in our products, but of course, when we do like a sleep lab test, you know, validations and data collection, and then it's a little bit difficult to measure still in large scale EEG. And there has been some commercial attempts there, and so. But of course, then in a way, autonomic nervous system is. In a way, we also measure part of the brain, some functions which are, you know, but cognitive functions. So not really. It's a little bit, it will be a little bit stretch for us, but in validation sets, yes. Maybe it's because I believe on applications in that area, like maybe in the learning domain, in you know, different kind of applied. So that's business to business. I believe and in rehab, and so when you have a really strong reason for using that. But then again, it's if you think of like watch like this, and you know these wearables, you know there are tens of millions of these sold, so it's a you know. So in a, we look for that kind of scale, but in more specific, and these specific verticals, they can grow. It can be quite specific, actually, and in a way quite small. But then if you think of that globally, it can go quite big. So that'd be my advice, actually. If you go for business, so try to get into do one thing really, really, really good. You don't need to solve everything, but be best in the world in one thing. So that the customers, they wouldn't have any other option than buying from you, you know? Do it really, really good. That one thing. I mean, of course, it needs to be complete in a way that you can buy, but you don't need to solve. It can be like some niche condition, maybe some niche you know, cognitive thing that you can help. Niche in a way, but then globally it can be big. And if you get there, then you can do the next thing. You can, you know, but you get, but you need to best be best in something. And it's a... for a startup or you know even bigger companies, they need to you know if you buy new get new business, you need to start from somewhere. It's easy to get from a smaller thing, do it, but doing that really really well. Being and big companies often have a problem in getting into some. They always need to think that you know this needs to be a multi-billion business at the beginning, and that's where they hurt themselves. They spend money lavishly there, and they think that they will get something done, and then they, at the end they get nothing done because they didn't really build it from the scratch and like that. But for smaller companies, that's an opportunity. You don't need to think billions initially. 1 million is already something, and then you can build it from there. Big companies cannot do it because big companies 1 million or 10 million or 100 million is not a business. But that's so that's doing one niche segment good. I think that's the opportunity in general in health, wellness, rehabilitation area.
Site department and our labs, they are actually Nokia's inheritance for us. We are working in their labs where they develop their mobile. So, and they probably, there is something, I guess, similar what you've been telling, they probably started from a bit quite small and until they became good. But what went wrong with Nokia? You must have given thought for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they are, of course, in a different field.
Yeah.
They're doing well, but
yeah.
Did you have some reflections?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're referring to the fall of, smartphone. Yeah. They had a lawyer, as a CEO who was looking at backwards at numbers and trying to optimize numbers. Without looking at future, and they had some like touch phone things there, but they didn't think that that's okay. That's maybe they didn't have good enough technology in the background. They had also I don't know, you remember Symbian operating system with the Nokia, and then they had this another operating system, and then they thought that you know we will not publish this new one. Because nobody would buy the old one; it's so much better. Well, how smart is that? That's so. I mean, of course, afterward is, but there's a when organizations grow, they get often very inflexible and middle management, and then you start looking at numbers and kind of get more careful, and that's And Steve Jobs made a great job in Apple being there. So it's a bit like law of nature. In a way that when you build a big enough organization, in a way it gets so rigid. It falls down. Because that's the opportunity for small companies is to be agile, be fast, develop, learn. Small team, learn first, learn fast. Not that you need to talk with 1,000 people, changing that ship. 5 people, from different disciplines, do it fast, and that's also how why many big companies work with small companies today, because they see that sometimes they see that they cannot they cannot produce these innovations there, and there's like CEO of Medtronic, a big company in this area, has told that for his people that don't think as a big company. They're obviously a big company, but try to think as a small company. And it's very challenging for big organizations like universities to be agile. It's challenging. But in a small team, you can do it.
Big applause to Yanni.
Thank you. So I wish you all the best with your paths that you will take and change the world.
And thank you, Joni, for taking your time and coming here. We hope to also be running things.
My pleasure.
Yes, that's very good. Thank you very much.